thanks to Round Kid Studios.
Patty from Round Edge.
Kia ora. Well, that outro of that song fed quite nicely in. It was pretty full on synth madness.
Kind of worked in together nicely, didn't it?
Lovely.
Now, as mentioned about 30 seconds ago, just text in any questions you have for Patty. What was your official title again, Patty?
Studio manager and producer engineer.
We've had our first text in, and someone is wondering, could you please explain what those roles are in a bit more detail?
Oh,
so yeah. Potentially that could be Neil Finn just wondering exactly what you do, because he's your boss, right?
Yeah, what have you been doing all day, Patty? What have I been paying you for? Sick. Well, studio manager's pretty... that's a pretty all-encompassing role. The building itself houses two studios, so I make sure those are looking their sharpest. I'm dealing with the kind of day-to-day stuff of people coming and going. And then we've got a couple of staff producers, or what we call in-house producers, which I look after and deal with their bookings, their scheduling, who's working when, and that kind of stuff. So it's a whole lot of jazzmatazz, as well as everything else that kind of, it's like almost anything that happens in that building.
With the producer roles, would you get a rough idea of what bands you're booking and then pair them off with an appropriate producer?
Yeah, that's a huge part of it. So, a band's coming in and they're going, hey, I'm a hardcore band and I want to make this EP and stuff. And it's like, cool, you're not really going to suit this hip-hop pop guy that we have on thing, but you might suit this other guy who does a lot of like indie rock kind of stuff. So,
and when you go to the website as well, all your engineers and producers are listed with credits of all the stuff.
Yeah, totally. There's little links. Everyone's got like a little YouTube or a SoundCloud or something like that. Yeah. And it's making sure, I mean, it could be easy running any business to be like, cool, just give me your money and get what you want. But it's, I mean, you want people to walk out with the kind of the best feeling and the best experience. So giving them, I guess, the right experience as well is probably what you want. You don't want to be putting some crazy hip hop band on the tape machine or something like that if they're not the suited people for it.
Mm. Just with the two rooms, obviously they would have certain characteristics for each room.
Mm.
I mean, is either room suited to a particular style of music, or how would you describe the difference between the two?
So there's two rooms for those of you who don't know Roundhead. Two rooms, two studios. The Studio A, which was originally, when the building was built, the purpose-built studio, and it kind of looks like a big classic kind of recording studio, and it's got floating floors and isolated rooms and a huge kind of mixing desk on it. And that's really suited for albums. Classical music's really good because it's quite a big space. Choirs and things like that's really good.
Right.
But it sounds amazing for drums because you've got so much room. You can put this drum kit out in the middle and it's never going to hit the sides and reflect back, which is kind of the worst thing when you're recording drums in a small room, is it's the sound waves are hitting the ceiling and coming back into your mic, so you almost sound like you're in this little reverb tank or something. And then we've got downstairs, which is the brick room. Well, it's called the brick room because it's basically all exposed brick and was just the basement of the studio. They built upstairs and they were kind of like, well, we got this big basement down here, we should chuck another studio on it while we're at it, while we're throwing the tools down. And the sonic one of that is definitely a lot more lively. Bricks are porous, but they still have a hardness to them as well. So you get this weird thing where a bit of the sound absorbs, but it kind of reverberates as well, so you get this quite lively kind of exciting sound, which can work really well for quite rocky stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it creates quite a big energy, whereas the sound upstairs is a lot more controlled and doesn't, I guess, move and disperse as much. It kind of just blooms and sits, which is really nice for recording because you can kind of control your work a lot more.
So if someone wanted to book a day in the big room tracking drums, they could do that and then like pay for that and then take their track stems away?
Yeah, totally. It's a massive, massive part of it. I mean, I guess this day and age with, modern music and the way budgets and things work, it's not like the 70s where people can just hit the studio for 6 months. So we do a fair amount of, like, you know, bits and pieces for people. We might have the right amps that they want to use for the guitar sound or the drum kits up there
that you just sort of say, well, this is the drum kit you want for that, the sound. I mean, because you know the kit
totally.
So well, you know how to set it up.
Yeah, and someone might be like, oh, I want this really dry, dead 70 sound, or I want this quite open sort of like rock ballad kind of sound or something, or I want
so
this weird.
What are the popular kits you have? Some Gretsch, some Ludwig.
Yeah, the Ludwig. We got two Luddies. One's a 63, one's a 62. They're pretty.
A selection of snares.
And a selection of snares, some Superphonics, nice. some. What do we got? Some Brady. We got some. I think we got an Acrolite. There's some vintage premieres. There's a Slingerland. A couple of cool. those around. Yeah, it's a good diverse range. But we mainly have kind of vintagey and quirky sounding kits rather than kind of your modern, like, I don't know, PDP kind of DW modern recording kind of things, which is kind of, I guess, suits
they
a lot of the stuff.
They tend to jump out and have a bit more character, those kits.
Yeah, a lot more fun as well, because I guess those ones are probably the less. Less easy to find, and so when people come, it's like sick, and they don't get to smack on a vintage Ludwig every day, you know. Whereas, you know, you can get a Pearl.
Can you book out both rooms? Can you just take the whole studio and have stuff set up?
Do you
want to
book out downstairs, Johnny, while I do some drum tracking upstairs?
Can you do the A and the B studio?
Yeah, totally. I mean, we've done stuff like that. I mean, we've done it for big live stream events where we've had like band upstairs and string sections downstairs, or like, you know, it's a pretty intense move.
Have any internationals done such a thing?
Yes, we have. I can't disclose too much of what those are, but yeah, we've definitely done some stuff like that.
Who has been the sort of the biggest artist you've worked with that you've sort of been in awe of?
Oh, been in awe of. I didn't work with him, but I met Bob Geldof. That was pretty crazy. It was like, oh, it was like, met him at the door. He's like, "G'day, I'm Bob," and I was like, "Oh, it's Bob Geldof." I mean, I wasn't in awe of them, but it was kind of an awe as well. I worked a 17-hour session with the Migos, the Atlanta rapper trio. For those of you who don't know, and yeah, I definitely thought a lot of things that you'd see in hip hop videos and on social media was, you know, a bit of a facade, but no, it's real. There was stacks of cash. There was, you know,
a lot in the studio playing poker and stuff.
Yeah. Oh man, there was like portable PlayStations. There was a personal chef cooking
a cigar or
chicken
like
at like 7 in the morning, and hundreds of dollars worth of McDonald's being thrown around NFL-sized security guards. It was pretty real. It was an eye-opening experience, especially at 4 in the morning, where I was realizing, oh, I'm not going home, and this is not winding up anytime soon.
Do you think they cut anything from that session to record?
Yeah, they did. They did. There was a couple of, like, the way the hip hop guys work, you know, it could be like, you know, they need a mic and some speakers to kind of get their stuff done. So there was a few vocals I recognized from a few tracks on that Culture 2 album that were there, but there was one beat that was made that was quite funny. They were working in the studio, so the music's blasting, but then there's one of the guys in the group who's sitting there with his own laptop trying to produce the song, and obviously it's too loud for him, so he goes outside into our little smokers area, but it's not covered, so it starts to speckle with rain, so he gets his assistant to come out and stand with an umbrella for like 4 hours while he's making this beat, and this guy's like holding his arm, holding this umbrella over him, and then he comes back in and plays the song, and Simon and I, who's the guy I was working with at the time, starts playing, and it's this Bob Marley sample of Get Up, Stand Up, and I was like, we're looking at you, and we're like, there's no way that you're ever going to get Bob Marley cleared as a sample, and then the record comes out, and there it is. It's, I think it's like one of the last tracks, and it's this huge Bob Marley sample. I'm just like,
about the smoking area and such. Have you ever taken advantage of any other like spaces in the studios? Like, are there stairwells or anything? Your vocalists have wanted to like singing?
I thought you were going to ask me another question there.
No. Well, you know, maybe in a couple of weeks we can talk about that one quite.
Yeah, there's actually a really, and I was asking Neil about it the other day. It's actually and. There's a stairwell in there that's got an amazing acoustic. So if you go in the front door, you can go straight ahead to Studio A, or you go downstairs to the brick room. And there's this, all the walls in the building are concrete, but the stairwell's quite, it's really tall ceilings. It must be, I don't know, like 15, 20 meters high, but it's got this beautiful acoustic, and I've recorded a few things in there. Acoustic guitars, vocals, or just setting up a speaker to make like your own sort of DIY chamber reverb, and that's really cool.
Nice.
I've done drums in the garage before because we wanted a really like home recording sound for one of the drum tracks, and I got massive scolding for you know, the drums were echoing up the street and it was
neighbors
going up. Well, the neighbors,
bananas.
Yeah, yeah.
Because yeah, there's apartments across the road, isn't there?
Apartments across the road.
A couple of work office buildings.
Yeah, they were not impressed. And they were basically like, why the heck are you doing this in here if you've got, you know, purpose-built recording studios? Yeah. Don't ever do it again kind of thing.
Hey, should we play a track? You can text in your questions for Paddy, 5395. There's a few come through. We'll get to them after this tune.
Yeah, sick.
Tell us a bit about this King Sweeties.
I just love these guys. They're so great. And I'm actually going to pop along to see them tonight up at nice Hopetown Alpha for the Elemental series. It's going to be real dope. And they're playing with Opossum, which I'm hyped to see as well, because I think it's going to be the first time I see both of them. So it'll be a rad time. Like, who's your mate, Jeff? And I was like, sorry, we're talking off air about
someone. I just turned the mics on.
That was a good text.
Yeah,
someone just sent in a message about Bob Geldof's "That's So Bob!" That's exclamation so Bob. Mark. So I guess if you knew Bob Geldof, you might know.
What is sort of a classic Bob? Classic Bob move.
A couple of questions come through, Paddy from Roundhead. If there were artists looking to get in contact with some local producers, would you be a good person to try and get in contact with?
Absolutely, and I think that's I really enjoy doing that as well, because sometimes stuff comes to us or comes to me or through my mailbox or whatever that isn't going to be something that I can help with. Not every producer can do every job, but we have a great network, and often if I think I'm like, okay, this person is going to work for them, I'll usually put them in touch. And you know, someone might come to me and be like, yo, I'm dank hip hop track, I really want to make this, I want to make some beats and, you know, do this thing, and that's not really my thing, but I'll be like, oh, I've got this friend Rory who's really amazing at that, he's got a little studio down here, you can contact him and tell him I sent you, kind of thing. And yeah, it's definitely worth reaching out, even in that aspect, even if you wanted just to little bit
put
of help.
Point in the right direction.
Yeah, totally, totally. Yeah,
I would. It was a text about training.
Here we go.
Education.
Hi, BFM. Amateur producer question here. Is a formal education required or necessary to get a footing in the industry? Looking at going to SAE next year, looking for some input from a pro.
Yeah, I think it depends on where you want to end up and how, you know, where you want to go with the career. I think it definitely helps. It's the information's all out there, and there's a lot of YouTube and there's a lot of forums you can go, but my experience, and I went to mains, is it felt like a really fast track. Like you're one on one with these people who are, you can ask this question, go, yo, I don't understand what this is, and they can tell you in 2 seconds rather than you combing over the internet for hours going which answer's right, which answer's not. The other thing is, there's like, if you want to get into music recording, those places you get a free studio, there's free microphones. Yeah. There's like, well, it's not free, you pay your yearly fees, but you know, then when you get there, it's like,
if you're doing like, you get like free demos, I mean, yeah, great studio to do your assignments.
Yeah, totally. I mean, and when I was there, I had kind of had to get sort of bludgeoned out because I was booking the studio too much, because I was like, I couldn't believe it, like half the time it was empty. So I was just there, anytime I wasn't in class, it was like friends, bands, people I knew, just like even just sitting in there and trying to like mix it or like find some stuff online, make music, whatever I was doing. It was just, I couldn't believe that there was just this cupboard full of microphones and instruments and things to mess around with, and it's pretty cool. So I definitely recommend it. It's a, I mean, you've got to weigh up your situation financially and stuff, and whether you're taking student loans and all that kind of jazz, but I definitely think there's a little bit of a gain to be had going through that way, and the connections as well. There's a lot of people go on to things, and yeah, I found the...
How many people from your class did you find went on to have sort of jobs in the industry?
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating. Quite a few. I mean, it was it was a 3-year thing, and in the first year there was 40 in the class, I think, and then in the second year there was about half that, and then in the third year there was about half that again, and then probably half that again now are kind of in the local industry. There's a few that have gone off into different parts of New Zealand, but there's probably like, out of my class of probably 10 or 15, there was probably 7 or 8 that are still cranking the industry, and that's
because I guess if you don't end up at a studio, you can go off and instead like do live events and things.
Yeah,
like
live
that.
Events. I mean, and
work at ASB Theatre and just also, yeah.
Yeah, totally.
It's limitless, really, isn't it?
And people have gone on to like venue management, like helping run festivals. People have gone to like APRA, New Zealand On Air, Recorded Music, all those kind of like organisations, like smaller labels, smaller studios, or just gone freelance as well, you know. Yeah, it's so open-ended, and I think for me, I came from a relatively small town in the South Island, and you don't see a lot of what the opportunities there are until I was at Mains or something, and it was like, whoa, there's all these career choices. I had no idea. I thought there was just like guitarist or person who hit record.
I've got a question. What's the most... Have you seen, like, musicians, like to get into a vibe before they lay down a take, or when they're on their 7th take or something? Candles, things like that, maybe a glass of wine. Have you seen, like, some just rituals that have made you, like, sort of turn your head and go, oh, my gosh.
Rituals
for God's sakes, you know.
Yeah,
just
there's definitely...
Short of witchcraft.
Yeah, there's definitely some people who are, like, light the candles or, like, go out the room so I can... And, like, you know, turn the lights off so I can have, like... a few moments to myself, and you know, you just get like, all right, okay, just sing the song, man. It's pretty fun. I mean, each to their own as well. It's a hilarious thing. Not recently, cool. Anyway, but I've definitely had a few people that it's just
who are
like,
the worst singers, guitarists, or drummers?
Oh, you know, it's funny because I feel like singers usually are just like, right, that's it, that, you know, this is as good as I'm gonna sing. Whereas like drummers are like, oh, I can definitely do this. I can do this. I'm like, just give me one more. And it's like, dude, man, it's just like take 19. We're not doing this.
And
yeah.
Mess.
Yeah, and you're just like, oh, I'm just going to edit this shit together. Sorry.
We've got
like,
Pro Tools. We
yeah, they're just like, okay, cool. Okay. I think we got it now. Dope. Come on in. Nice work, dude. You're like, damn.
Okay. I thought guitarists would have come off.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's some good guitar soloists. That's actually a good one. It's just like, yeah, just one more. Oh, yeah, cool. Just one more. Oh, no. Oh, okay, yeah, cool.
As a producer, have you ever made the call where you've said, look, that's it for tonight. You've hit the wall. We'll come back in the morning and resume. Do you have to make those calls from time to
time?
Yeah,
totally. Yep. But I also think that there's times where I've had to trust, especially working with people I know really well, where I've had to trust them, and it's like, all right, it's getting to pretty early hours now. It's like 1 a.m. kind of thing, and they're like, "No, this is the. I think it's coming." And then those times it's paid off, and then sometimes you're just like, "Why are we still here?" No, but it's a lot of ebb and flow.
Ah, music.
Yeah,
it's good fun.
It is. Those late nights are a killer.
All right. Hey, Paddy from Roundhead, thank you for coming in to BFM. You can check out Roundhead online. The website is roundhead.com.
Roundheadstudios.com.
Roundheadstudios.com. Yep. We're going to go out on some Soaked Oats.
Some Soaked Oats, yeah. Catch them this Friday. Live on your guys' show, right?
Yeah, they're live, playing live in the BFM Lounge at 6 p.m. They'll just knock out a couple of couple of tracks to get warmed up for their show later that night at the Tuning Fork. With support from Hans Puckett.
Yo, I think
you can hear along?
I am going to be away. I'm going to be a bad print. But I heard there might be some new bangers in the set. So, get your tickies and get ready for that.
I am going to play Gum 15.
Oh, yo.
And
sick.
We'll be back with some news, weather and surf very shortly, right?
Kia ora. Goodbye,
mate.
Everyone.
95 BFM presents Soaked Oats, October 23rd at the Tuning Fork.
We're traveling slow, and now this chair's got a mold. And only when the rust shows, well, do we stop to inspect. Look at the way the dust glows. Cracks etch all across the skin. In the days of your life, the wrinkles start to appear, and I snap that I am really here. Been traveling without a care for 3,000 light years. 3,000 light.
Studios.